Gibbs, founder of Incandescent Public Relations, publisher of Being Incandescent Business Magazine, and your host for the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. Hello, and welcome to the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show. I'm your host, Hope Katz Gibbs, and we are here today with Karen Hanrahan, an appointee in the Obama administration, serving as the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Human Rights and Democracy. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Thank you, Hope. I'm happy to be here.
So let's tell the audience a little bit about you before we launch into our Q&A. Karen began her work in the Obama administration, working with Ambassador Richard Holbrooke when she was the U.S. Coordinator for International Assistance to Afghanistan and Pakistan. From there, Karen went on to design and run the Quadrennial Diplomacy and Development Review for Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. She also served as the Chief Innovation Officer for the U.K. Department of International Development on detail assignment in London. We met Karen back in the spring of 2008, before she stepped into some of these top jobs. The common denominator for all of her work through her illustrious career has been working with the United States government agencies to help improve the plight of people around the world. So human rights is our topic today, and Karen is our cover story in the November 2014 issue of Be Incandescent magazine. So now let's get started talking about human rights. So Karen, when I looked it up, human rights are defined as moral principles or norms that describe certain standards of human behavior and are regularly protected as legal rights in national and international law. So tell us, how do you define human rights from your perspective as a government, an Obama appointee, and also how is it defined by the U.S. government?
Well, I think human rights are the foundation and the core of the human experience. They are the basic rights and freedoms that we are all entitled to just because we are human. They protect all people, regardless of sex, national or ethnic origin, race, religion, language, or other status. They include everything from civil and political rights, such as the right to life, freedom from torture, freedom of expression, freedom of speech. They also include another category, which are called social, cultural, and economic rights, which include everything from the right to work and receive education. These rights, most of them were laid out, core basic rights were laid out in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights a number of decades ago. And then they have been expanded upon, they're protected and upheld by international laws and treaties, as you mentioned in your definition. Again, these are the rights and freedoms that provide the foundation for human dignity, and they belong to all of us. Where the rights are not protected, abuses occur, torture happens, discrimination, slavery, rape, killings, and all kinds of forms of injustice and abuse happen. And despite the fact that we now see strong legal frameworks around the world that protect human rights and define them, abuses are still happening all over the world every day in all countries. And the only other point that I would make to supplement your definition, and it's something that you asked about the Obama administration's definition. I would say that under the leadership of President Obama, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and now Secretary of State Kerry, we view human rights not just as moral principles and values. We actually view the protection of human rights as strategically important to our national security and to global stability. We're finding increasing data and information around the world that links the state of the human condition and issues of justice, protection of rights, with stability. So we think of them not just as moral principles, but also strategic laws, interests, and protections.
Yes, and the plight of women and girls especially, not to mention millions of other groups who are persecuted around the world, it's daunting, right? And it's much less, just so complicated to solve. So what are some of the reasons, do you think, that people are persecuted like this just on a regular basis? I mean, ISIS, there's just so many things going on. And how, what are you guys doing to help make a change?
I think you're right. By, you know, mentioning women and girls, they are a particularly vulnerable group around the world. They tend to suffer abuses ranging from discrimination to gender-based violence, child marriage, trafficking. You know, that they for a range of reasons, they along with other vulnerable groups just tend to end up suffering more abuse. At the same time, particularly over the past decade or so, there's increasing attention to the lives and condition of women and girls around the world, increased investment in pulling women and girls up, educating them, providing for their health, the full range of support because of the data that we've learned that women and girls are critical to pulling governments out of, or countries out of poverty. So it is a particularly important problem, but there are other vulnerable groups as well that, that also suffer abuses quite regularly, and that includes the disabled. It includes lesbian, gay, transgender, and bisexual individuals. It includes minority ethnic groups, minority religious groups. There is something about being a minority around the world that often leads to discrimination and abuse. So we in the administration are doing a number of things to try to mitigate these problems and issues. You know, some of them are you know, we advance human rights in a range of ways. One, we are constantly seeking to influence foreign governments, both to change their laws, to change their practices. Where specific cases of abuse have come up, we spend a great deal of time advocating, either behind the scenes or sometimes publicly, for a reversal of that situation, protection of women and girls, protection of LGBT individuals. So, for example, recently in Uganda, the government came out with a very discriminatory law against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender individuals. The whole government, the U.S. government, rallied around trying to influence the Ugandan government to either reverse that law, not put it into practice. I can't say too much about all the things we did, but there's a large number of actors in the U.S. government who come together to try to influence. We also give a great deal of funding and money to support civil society and human rights defenders so that, and this is actually one of the most important aspects of what we do. We support local voices. We try to empower local organizations and individuals who are fighting for their rights and fighting for the rights of others in their country, in their regions, or globally. We do this through program funds. We do this through sometimes traveling and supporting projects abroad. There's a big part of our attention spent in our security policies. So policies that we are crafting every day, we try to integrate human rights. So you mentioned ISIS. There are many human rights aspects to that problem. Not only are they, as a group, violating the rights of all sorts of groups in the countries where they're operating, but also, if you take a step back, you can look at it in a more conceptual way, which is how was ISIS allowed to flourish? What was the environment and the conditions that led to ISIS gaining such support and such power? And some of us believe that part of that, in fact, is an issue of governance, poor governance, discrimination against minority groups, alienation of parts of the population. When that happens in places like Iraq, people are more likely to team up with forces like ISIS. So I'll stop there, but if you have any specific questions about things that we're doing, I'm happy to answer.
Well, I think what I want to talk about a little bit is just this global issue of, I mean, not speaking globally, but just this bigger issue of people who are in these positions of vulnerability tend to be the ones that are attacked and persecuted. I'm not sure if it's just human nature or, as you say, it is governance. And we know that, I mean, I think all of us as Americans know that we're definitely, the government is trying to help and do its best. It's just such a daunting topic. So for this issue where we're featuring you, our overarching theme is the business of counting your blessings. And we have all of our columnists writing about that topic from their industries. So in terms of counting our blessings and seeing the positive in the situation, in all the decades that you've been working on this topic, maybe what you can do is tell us if you've seen an improvement and how you are optimistic that things are getting better internationally.
I do think things are getting better. I think when I look at the situation of human rights around the world, I tend to look at it historically. If you look back over even the past 100 years, you can see immense gains in human rights. We have now a global and multinational legal framework that delineates rights of people around the world. There's consensus, for the most part, around these rights. These rights have been integrated into domestic laws all over the world. So again, the legal framework is very strong. Increasingly, countries are moving to a place where individuals can seek redress in their own countries where they face abuse. And I find that to be great progress. At the same time, we're still challenged. I think there are still groups around the world who face abuse and discrimination. There's still, in particular, when you look at situations of violent conflict, abuses are particularly bad in those situations, from torture and extrajudicial killings to sexual and gender-based violence. It's happening all over the world. One of the helpful things, though, is that we have bodies, international bodies, courts, to begin to start holding people accountable. So you have the International Criminal Court, you have regional tribunals, you have domestic courts, and there are an increasing number of ways to hold abusive individuals accountable. I also think another challenge that we're facing is a trend that we're seeing with governments. It's a new trend where they're increasingly cracking down on civil society and popular voices. What's going along with that is what we're seeing is an increase in governments being challenged by popular uprisings. So the power of people, your average citizen, they are increasingly connected to others, both in their country and around the world. They're increasingly educated about their rights, and they're increasingly demanding their rights. So what that's resulting in is, we saw in the Arab Spring, as we saw recently in Hong Kong, as we're seeing all over the world, particularly young people organizing, demanding their rights from their governments, trying to do more to protect rights of people in their societies. It's a positive trend on that side of things, where people are seeking their rights. The challenging trend is governments are dealing with that in different ways. Some are taking a harder stance, cracking down even harder, putting more people in jail. Governments have become very sophisticated around how to use their own laws, how to craft laws that will, in fact, limit freedoms of speech and limit civil society, freedom of association, and the ability of your average citizen to engage on human rights issues. So those are some of the trends we're seeing. I think we've seen a lot of positive progress on the state of women and girls, more rising out of poverty, more being educated, more being healthier, and able to take care of their families. We are, under this administration in particular, we're seeing another issue, LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender individuals. Their rights are being put on the front of the global agenda, the global human rights agenda. It's a very challenging issue to advocate for around the world, but it's up there. So I have a lot of optimism, and what makes me most optimistic is the people that I've met around the world who are human rights defenders, who are seeking to protect the rights of their own rights and those of their fellow citizens in very courageous ways.
You certainly have your work cut out for you. and that brings me to my next question. So our audience is small business owners. And so many small business owners, you know, immediately when they get into business, they want to start giving back, which is so wonderful and altruistic. But when it comes to the topic of human rights, I think, again, it's a daunting idea. How do we actually make a change on this global level in an area that's so violent in so many cases? What do you think? How can small business owners take some steps to make a difference?
Well, I think first they can examine their own business models, products, services, supply chains, and practices to ensure that they are not actually part of a human rights problem. And that will vary for all businesses. Their supply chains are different, their products are different, and some may not, it may not be relevant for some small businesses. But sometimes companies are not even aware that they're buying components or outsourcing to another company that exploits its labor or gets materials in unethical and abusive ways. A number of companies, both globally and domestically, are already finding ways to integrate socially responsible business practices and human rights into their own business models. It's about who they hire, how they hire people, how they engage in local communities. Another great way to contribute is to help raise awareness among your customer base, among your suppliers, and others about human rights issues relevant to your particular industry. Again, it depends on the business, but if it's just having an online business, you have the power to be connected to many customers, suppliers, et cetera. Helping to raise awareness on your website or through participating in a campaign, that's another way. So, and speaking of campaigns, I think small businesses should look for campaigns to be a part of, to join. So campaigns to stop global slavery, to protect women and girls, to improve labor rights abroad, other causes. There's a long list of causes that businesses can contribute to. They can contribute financially, spreading the word, advocating with their representatives in Congress, advocating with the executive branch, sponsoring events, et cetera. I think those businesses that are very interested and feeling particularly ambitious can think about joining forces with others in their industry to try to make a bigger difference on an issue. So there are a number of public-private partnerships out there where companies are joining up with NGOs or companies are joining up with governments to try to figure out how to solve particular problems. One of the big areas, for example, would be, and there are many examples, but one is women and girls. You have a number of companies from Coca-Cola to Gap working on projects globally and domestically to help empower women, to help get their own hiring practices, their own outsourcing practices in order. They also have foundations and give financially to projects and causes abroad. So it's, I mean, I think it really depends on the business, the industry. We're always willing to talk with businesses in our bureau. I also cover an office called the Office for Business and Human Rights. I'm more than willing to talk with small businesses to figure out where might they contribute.
Excellent. And how can people find that information out and get in touch with you?
So the bureau I work for is called, it's at the State Department. It's the Bureau for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor. They can call the main line of the State Department, which is 202-647-4000. They can actually ask for me by name, and they'll be put through to my office, to me or my assistant. I think I'm also, via this podcast, allowing them to be in touch with you to be in contact with me.
Excellent, excellent. So let's talk a little bit more about you. How did you get involved in this career?
So I have, since a young age, had a strong interest in justice. When I say a young age, I think it started to come on around high school. I think it's part of how I was raised. I had a mother who was very engaged in social justice issues. I've been fortunate enough, I think, to know what I wanted to do from a young age, and I've kind of pursued that as I've gone along. So, you know, I spent a lot of time working internationally where I came face-to-face with issues of abuse and injustice, as well as with incredible role models, human rights defenders, and everyday citizens who were under threat, who had been abused, who had overcome circumstances in their lives and in their communities that really inspired me. So I've had a long career doing very diverse things, but the underlying thread has always been justice and human rights.
And you're an attorney. Tell the audience a little bit more about your background.
Sure. I am an attorney by training, and I practiced law for a little while. I also have a master's degree in international conflict. I've spent, I spent time abroad working on conflict resolution and peace building, which was very interesting. But it was during that time when I realized I was more of an advocate. I felt like more of an advocate than a peacemaker. And I realize now, later in my life, that those are not mutually exclusive, but it made me, at a younger age, decide to get a law degree and to use the law, legal frameworks, to help try to advance human rights.
And it's amazing what you've done and what you've accomplished and how you've inspired others. So we give contact information one more time before we leave so that people can get in touch with you to talk more about how they can get involved in helping to end human rights abuse.
Sure. You can call the State Department, the general line, which is 202-647-4000. You can ask for me directly, and they'll put you through to my office, and we will speak with you and point you in the right direction from there.
Thank you so much, Karen Hanrahan, an appointee in the Obama administration, serving as the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Human Rights and Democracy. You have most definitely inspired us and educated us today, so we can't thank you enough for your time.
Thank you, Hope. It's been my pleasure.
You are listening to the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, your host. We look forward to talking to you soon.
So that's it for today's Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, where we always ask, what's your story? If you have a good one and would like to be interviewed on the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, send me an email to hope@hopegibbs.com. Check back every Monday at noon for a new episode of the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, www.incandescentradio.com. We look forward to talking to you next week. Here's to your incredible, indelible success.